everybody. Welcome to I Like It Spooky Horror Podcast. I'm Brian.
I'm Leah Stalker.
I am Clint, and I love how the universe works because on the recent feature episode that just came out, Brian and I got into a huge, sort of huge discussion about comics. And on this episode of Indie Spotlight, we are talking about comics.
Well, a comic. Oh, we could talk about other comics too, but yeah, a comic.
The world of comics. It's fine.
What's the name of the comic?
The Terrifying Crimson Bat.
When I first looked at the cover of this, I immediately got Batman. It's kind of hard not to. You had the Batman kind of half mask, right? And the mask joke with Leah is starting to get old. Almost. It's not quite out the door yet. But I also was like, oh, Leah's going to like this. There's a mask involved. And I'm kind of half-ass serious when I say that.
I'm going to say that I actually didn't process it in the usual mask way just because of the fact that he is a half zombie and I do have ever so slightly some sort of standards, but that's a fair assessment. That is a fair assessment to think that are we sure that the mask joke isn't old yet? I would love for that to be an old joke now.
No, it's not old yet.
Oh, okay, good.
I thought it was getting kind of, it's getting there.
Well, I mean, it's, this guy's a half zombie, that joke's half old, he's not dead, it's not dead, it's still there.
How about this? The Leah mask joke is middle-aged.
Yeah.
There we go. It's having a midlife crisis. I love that for it. There we go. That's perfect. But I automatically did not look at the cover of the comic and pop a boner or anything like that. I did think that the art was fabulous. So there is that.
So right off the bat, I love the look and the feel of it. And then I also have in my notes here, I loved how the artists, there was it one writer and one illustrator? Or was it the two guys working on the whole thing?
Yeah, it's Aaron Rizzo is a creator and Tam Sugiyan Jr. is the artist, but they also have like 9 variant covers. 6 variant covers from different people. And I don't know if you guys have checked those out, but they're on their Instagram and on their website. You can check out their website at crimsonbatcomics.com. You can check out their Instagram at The Terrifying Crimson Bat. There are some cool, I mean, there's a Black Christmas variant cover. There's a Jason Goes to Manhattan variant cover. There's a Halloween variant cover.
Well, that's another part of my notes is that you could see their influences in what was presented to us to read. But what I was going to say was I loved how you could see that they were experimenting with different styles, different visual styles. And maybe I'm wrong. Someone more versed in comics or them themselves, you know, reach out and tell me. But I saw a little bit of Photoshop. I saw some like, you know, traditional kind of line comic work. I saw just kind of that, what I love, the kind of sketchy, blurred out, just a lot of different artistic styles put into this comic.
I completely agree that it definitely has, like, I'm looking at it right now and just looking at the bedroom scene when he slams the door closed, it does have the cross hatching, it has the grid of Photoshop, it has a lot of texture in it, which looks like it was done maybe more of, so I like all the combinations of everything. That's a really good point, in my opinion, that they've took all of the medians available to them and they combine them together in a very unique way, because on the first page, it had said that it was art and influenced by 80s punk rock flyers, and I was so in it right from that point.
Oh, I got a big smile right when I read that too. Like, okay, we're getting into something good.
The other thing that I noted a lot about the art style is that when you do think punk rock flyers, you're going to think of just black and white. The artists also made the decision. The only color that they incorporate into the comic is red, and it's done in such a good way where sometimes it's going to be a little bit lighter. When it's something like the door slamming, it's going to be a really solid red. There's some action scenes that happen later on. The more action that there is, the darker that red is going to be. And it was such a cool choice. I absolutely love that.
Well, and I'm really glad that they went with red because it's called the Crimson Bat. So if they would have went with green or something, it would have been like, what the fuck is going on?
It could have been a choice.
And it's a quick read. It's 28 pages. It does not feel like 28 pages. It's quick. It's to the point. It gets to the story, and it leaves you wanting more at the end.
It was an easy read. It was entertaining. And I think part of it goes back to the point that Leah made, where I saw in the beginning, it said that a lot of the dialogue was based on musical lyrics also. So I'm like, okay, this is going to kind of read like a song, like I'm reading song lyrics. And the dialogue, it was minimal. It wasn't absent though, and everything just flowed real well.
One, I think you can be a horror movie fan. You can be a comic book fan. You can be, you know, that Marvel DC fan. But the thing that got me was the first place they go is to a convention. And, you know, we love going to conventions. I was like, I'm in. Let's go. Let's see if we can see anything cool at this convention.
Well, and they had some humor in the story, too, where, of course, the guy forgets his wallet.
Yeah.
The number one rule.
There's always the one buddy going, oh, man, I forgot my wallet, man. Can you loan me a couple bucks?
Yeah, you know, cash is king and the ATM's usually out of money by 10 o'clock on Friday.
Yeah, no shit. So back to Leah's point, too, all the different artistic styles. I think it was kind of important. I don't know if it was by design or by accident. The comic world is so, you just go to your local comic shop and look at the shelves and you're immediately overwhelmed. There are so many great stories, so many great artists, so many great comics that I feel it would be hard to do something and really break into that industry and make a name for yourself. So I don't know if it was by choice or if it was a happy accident, but they kind of threw a little bit of everything in there as far as the artistic style to appeal to everybody. And then I think you could also see their influences too, where I don't know if you guys agree with this or not, but I immediately picked up on The Crow. I picked up on Ghost Rider. And of course, I picked up on Batman.
The interesting thing about this comic is that, so fun fact about Leah is actually when I was young, I wanted to make comic books. That was actually something that I was super passionate about. I taught myself to do art. I would do little comics. So me and my friends, we all were artists and we would do comics for each other that would include a lot of our personal inside jokes and references to things that we liked. And so you're mentioning how they kind of shoved everything in there, like The Crow and Batman and this and that. I'm kind of viewing it in the sense that it feels like these are just things that they're very passionate about that are probably very important. It's very important to their group while it's hitting all the buttons for us because these are things that they like. This could have been a comic that was just shared amongst them. And I do think that there's probably inside jokes in this comic that we're not even picking up. But the best part of it is that it's a read for everyone. No one's going to read anything in this comic and be like, ah, I don't quite get that joke. I don't get that reference. Everyone will be able to get it on all levels. But I do think that there's probably even more to it where the comic book fiends are probably teeing to themselves and kicking their that's why I think there's so much in it, is I think that they first made this project for themselves, which is great.
I agree. You could see the personal influences as well. And you just said the word fiend. So if no one picked up on it, if neither of you guys are Misfit fans, of course, the punk rock band, the Misfits, the Fiend Club is a pretty huge influence in this story.
And as you get towards the end of the book, the last couple pages, there's a comic book Fiend Club. There's a QR code you can scan. It says a comic book social club aimed at bringing true comic collectors together. There's another reason to pick it up. Scan the QR code. See what's going on in the Fiend Club.
So one thing I didn't know, and I haven't had a chance to ask you, Brian, is I read it. I enjoyed it. Is it in comic shops now, or is it where you can get a hold of them on the social media stuff you listed off at the beginning of the show where you can, you know, like buy it or purchase it or read it or pick it up that way?
Yes, you can go over to CrimsonBatComics.com. Sign up for their emails. You can buy the Terrifying Crimson Bat main cover. $4.99. Then there's a blank variant, a Batman 227 homage variant, Virgin variant, a Halloween variant, Friday the 13th Part 8 variant, Amazing Spider-Man 238 variant, a Black Christmas variant, sketch cards. What's this? A Fiend pack. Oh, looks like it's sold out. Damn it. See, they're doing something right. Yeah, they had a comic that was signed at one point that's sold out. They have some art prints and they have some other comics that they've actually put out. It looks like Ninja Funk number one looks fun.
And I tell you what, like Leah was talking earlier that, you know, that she early on aspired to, was it to be a comic book artist or just be a creator?
I thought that I had it in me, especially back in the day when everyone did web comics. I was like, I could make a web comic. I could make a comic and then I could, you know, upload that and have people read it and this and that. Unfortunately, the thing was, is all of our comics only revolved around our inside jokes. We didn't have a story. We just had our characters and our jokes, and anyone else that read it had no fucking clue what was going on. So, but it was fun for us. But like I said, you know, they were able to expand it. Yeah, comic book artists, I guess.
I can only imagine even more so now, like I was talking about how the comic book world is, I don't want to say oversaturated, but full. We'll say the cupboards are full. Back in 2003... Well, this was 2002 into 2003 when I wrote my first screenplay. There was a place which is no longer. It's in my hometown here at Jackson, Michigan. It was called the Lost Word Bookstore. And it was a bookstore, but it was ran by a guy named Bill Bates, who has since passed away. And he had ties in the movie industry. In fact, he was a part of the 1976 Demon Lover shot here in Jackson, Michigan with Don Jackson. And that's a whole nother story. But so Bill went on to run this bookstore. And then it had a huge back room. And what it was a community for comic book artists, writers, illustrators. And it was where we would all show up and just help each other. In fact, so I would go there because there was nothing like that. And there is nothing today in Jackson, Michigan. So I had no community, no one to point me in a direction. You know, I was in my early 20s. I didn't know what the fuck I was doing writing the screenplay. So it was kind of cool to be able to lean on each other. Out of that, there was this place called Dragon Crest Studios, and which I don't think they're around anymore either. But I remember they were working really hard to put a legitimate comic book together and get something going and out on the shelves. And I remember, you know, it was 2003, so that's forever ago. I remember watching them struggle and all the hurdles and all the challenges and all the hard work that went into getting their comic out there. Again, back to these guys with Crimson Bat, it's amazing anymore just to get anything out there. And then to have it be something enjoyable that reads well and is beautiful artistically.
I think one of the things that helps any artist or any group is being passionate and sharing your passion, which is obviously something they're doing. And if you sell enough comics to start out with to cover your costs, you continue your passion and hopefully build something that, hell, maybe someday we see a terrifying Crimson Bat movie. To hell, that'd be cool. I'd watch it.
The story definitely did pull me in. And the thing that it really reminded me of is, because like I said, I did like comic books when I was younger. I was very much the type where I would take my paycheck. I would go into Vault of Midnight. I went strictly by looks. I didn't do research. I didn't go into the big name superhero things.
You based a book off its cover? You, of all people, based a book off its cover?
Fuck yeah, I did. That's literally all I did by art because I was an artist. I did a lot of art when I was younger. So I was strictly, and I had a very distinct art style that I liked. And so my big three that were heavily influential is Girl Scouts by Jim Mahfood, Lenore, the cute little dead girl by Roman Dirge. And then you guys are going to know this one, I'm sure, is Johnny the Homicidal Maniac by Johan Vasquez, who went on to do Invader Zim on Nickelodeon.
Oh, cool.
So that's the thing, is that Johnny the Homicidal Maniac was one of my absolute favorites. It was literally just, his name was Johnny. He went by Knee for short. It was the weirdest shit. It was all just black ink on white. It was very fucking strange. And were you a big fan of that, Brian?
Do you think he wore a mask, Clint?
Oh, God.
He didn't wear a fucking mask. He didn't wear a fucking mask.
I'm looking.
No, he was just this really scrawny dude who murdered people in a very comical way. It was a very niche comic back in the day, but he had such a distinct, Jonan had such a distinct style and comedy style. And then if you compare that Johnny the Homicidal Maniac to Invader Zim, that's the thing, is that you can see he didn't bring Johnny the Homicidal Maniac to Nickelodeon, but he got to do something that was very much in his style. So
the third picture I pulled it up is like, looks like Invader Zim. Yeah, I was like, oh, definitely his art style.
Plus, it's just fun to see Johnny the Homicidal Maniac. That's just kind of fun.
Really, like it had a weird little kid in it named Squee. It was very fun. But that's what this comic made me think of a lot, is not just because of the gritty art style, it being very brutal like Johnny the Homicidal Maniac was, but also just the fact that I do hope that this opens a lot of doors for them. They are very talented. They are very respectful of the various cultures of comic conventions and horror and music and all that. They're in so many things in the way that they reference them. And I wish nothing but the world for these people, because I do think that they're so creative and the story has just pulled me in. The art style pulled me in. They've pulled me in. It just seems like friends having fun and I want to be part of it.
Well, and another important part of that is just based off the synopsis alone, which I don't have in front of me. When I read the synopsis, I saw they immediately did not like pigeonhole themselves into like just a brief story arc. They immediately left this story open for just an infinite universe to explore. If this story really does resonate with people, if this specific comic, they could just keep writing this for years.
I do have a question. Okay, just because we all seem to have at least dipped our toes into comics, and this is my one, maybe not even a gripe, but a confusion. So maybe we can talk this out. Is the fact that you mentioned the synopsis. And so, you know, they had this really great little write-up talking about what they're influenced by, this and that. Then the last paragraph is literally a synopsis beginning to end of like, here's the story. And I was like, okay, that's the story. And then you get into the comic and then it's once again, just felt weird to me to lay out every plot point of the story before I read it. So I wasn't sure if this was, is that weird or is that?
No, it is weird. But if I understood what I was looking at, I don't think that's what's in the actual comic. Like if you were going to go to the store and buy it, I don't think that would be printed on or within it. I got the impression that was just kind of like, you know, part of their, I don't know what you would call it.
Press package. Is it the press?
Thank you. Yeah. Part of the press package.
So that is actually what I thought, because I brought it up to my roommate, because I said, this seems weird to me to lay all of this out to me. And he goes, is that your press sheet? Is that them explaining it? So if that's not included with it, that was literally the only thing where, and like I said, it wasn't even a bad thing because the comic is also the dialogue, it's the art, it's all of that sort of stuff. So it's not like anything was ruined. I was just like, why am I getting it first and then I'm getting it the second time? So if that's press though, that makes total sense to me.
Yeah, that would be my guess what it is. Or it's maybe on the back of the comic and the back pages of it. But I would think it would be the press package.
One thing we haven't done yet is for our listeners is maybe we should kind of like we do when we cover movies in the feature show, we should kind of lay out the story a little bit. So it's about this guy, him and his buddies go to cons. We kind of talked about that already. Is it that he forgets his wallet, right? And that's why he leaves to go home?
Roll one.
Yeah, there's jokes about forgetting his wallet, yeah.
Don't forget your wallet. And he breaks it.
And so he's leaves the convention to go back to his apartment or home or whatever to get his wallet, decides to take a shortcut through this like creepy park or creepy part of town. They kind of even give, I shouldn't go through here because people have been murdered in there and stuff like that. But he's like, it's going to be quicker. I'll be fine. The guy cuts through there and stumbles upon a demon who is just murdering somebody. Then the demon turns, murders him, and he is buried. And then for whatever reason is brought back to life and is basically a zombie and decides it's his mission with the help of this kind of, oh, I don't know, like mystic anti-demon. I wasn't quite sure what to label it, to battle demons and monsters that try to break through into this world.
That's the long and short of it. The last page is the terrifying Crimson Bat is born. So we are just getting, this is exactly how the story begins. Front to back on that, but it was a great way to introduce a character. It made you very sympathetic to him. You felt bad for him. And I'm really interested in seeing what he's got going on next and who the other characters were that came into play.
Unfortunately, it does not roll off your tongue as easy as Johnny the Homicidal Maniac.
No.
Well, nothing could.
I mean, it gets you that hook at the end where this other person shows up and says, come with me, I'll explain everything. And you're like, who the fuck is this person? Now I gotta read the second one.
He's got a fucking chainsaw strapped to his back. I'm listening to that man, whatever he has to say.
That's in my notes because from my haunted attraction background as a haunt actor, I always wanted to do that. And I wanted to have like a kind of like Lefty from Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 2. I wanted to have like a chainsaw holster, like a gun holster or a strap on my back. Is it badass? Yes. Practical? No. So I never tried to pull it off. But so when I saw that illustration of this kind of like, maybe like guardian angel that takes this, the Crimson Bat on this journey of retribution, had the chainsaw strapped to his back. I just thought that is just, I loved it.
He's living your dream. That's what he's doing.
I got a big grin.
He even smoking a cigarette.
Yeah.
He's like ready to fucking go.
He's smoking a cigarette. He's living Brian's dream too. The funny thing is,
rat me out, Leah. God,
I'm sorry. How many times have I got ratted out for my fucking mask fetish? I'm ratting you guys out any chance I can.
You're the one that said fetish. We fetish. Yeah. We brought the word fetish weird because I have masks sitting behind me too. You just can't see them.
The joke is back.
She has a fetish, ladies and gentlemen. Now we know she has a problem.
I'm trying to make a fucking point here, and all I was going to say is the fact that you said that he was kind of a guardian angel is the fact that we've said that this comic has a lot of roots in punk rock, and I'm looking at that page right now, and the hilarious part is that he has an Anarchy A on his t-shirt, so if he was a guardian angel with a big Anarchy A, that'd be entertaining. It's not as entertaining now because it took me so long to get the point out because everyone was yelling about shit, but it's fine.
That's a good point. I'm glad you were able to get through it.
Thanks.
And talking about that, I'll just expand on that just a little bit. I will say that the comic tends to lead a little more masculine. You know what I mean? But to your point about the anarchy, is the whole thing when you said that, it made me realize that it reminded me very much of the age of the anti-hero, or Brian and I talk about professional wrestling of the Attitude Era. And you don't see a lot of that anymore. Everybody's kind of more complex and all these different feelings and emotions. And this was kind of straight, raw, I say old school, but I'm talking 20 years ago, just that anti-hero feel. Just fuck you, anarchy, you know, blood, guts, and gore.
I agree that it did lean very masculine, but it's just a damn good story. It's damn good characters. And the thing is, too, is that the dialogue is very funny. We haven't gotten into the dialogue much at all, and I'm not going to cover a lot. I will just say, though, that the page that took me out is right when this guy comes. We've said he comes back from the dead. He's confused and he has a lot of questions, and it has the questions flecked all over. Some of my absolute favorite, I'm not trying to give a bunch away, but did I just get my ass kicked? Why do I smell like I shit my pants? Did I just dig myself out of a fucking grave? Who was that ninja elf? Are my nails black? Does this make me emo? Where the hell is my wallet? What in the entire fuck? So that is just, I figured that I don't obviously want to give away a bunch of the dialogue, but that right there tells you this, it's got so much good fucking comedy to it. It's very, very funny. And that page, it had me cracking up laughing. I was kicking my feet giggling the whole time.
No, I agree, especially when I saw the wallet, because I made sure I took the time to read each one. And some of them were kind of just very serious, important to the moment of the story questions. And then, yeah, there were the, why do I smell like shit? And then when I saw the, where's my wallet, I started laughing too.
I've got it in all caps. The wallet keeps coming back. So as we're getting into convention season, everyone, please remember rule number one. Don't forget your fucking wallet.
Or you're going to have to leave. You're going to get tore up by some fucking demon. And then you're going to come back as a demon to fight other demons. And you're still not going to know where the fuck your wallet is. So just, I don't know. Get the wallet chain. What happened with the... I have a wallet with a chain. Remember that shit?
I have a wallet with a chain as well.
And that could also be a weapon to fight off the demon in the park.
There you go. I'm just in my divorced dad era, so that's why I have it. But I listen to a lot of Creed and Nickelback as well. Oh. But...
He said, ooh. Listen, Leah, I'm going to come to your aid, okay? I'm going to tell the world a dirty little secret of mine.
Oh.
I don't hate Nickelback. I enjoy Nickelback. I have always enjoyed Nickelback. I don't know why people hate on him so much. I think the world turned in them when it was that whole, look at this photograph, I still love you, I'm in the shower, and they got all kind of soft and ballady.
Look at this photograph. Every time I do, it makes me laugh. How did our eyes get so red?
Because up until that point, they had kind of an edge to them, but I enjoy Nickelback also. I just bought some fucking street credit, but I do.
No, Nickelback is good. Creed is good. And the thing is like I said, the divorced dad rock is completely making a comeback. So I proudly wear my chain wallet. So if someone wants to talk shit about Nickelback, you can send it at puremacabre@gmail.com.
I had no idea. I learned so much from you. I'm Gen X. What are you?
Me? I'm a millennial.
Okay, good. So I learned so much from your millennial ass, because I had no idea what thirst traps were. Apparently, I am a middle-aged, midlife crisis, divorced dad. When I wear my wallet with my chain, I had no idea. I thought I was just being fucking cool and I wasn't losing my wallet. So I got slaughtered by a fucking demon on my way to home to fucking get my wallet because I don't know where it was. Did that make any sense?
It made pure sense. But the hilarious part is the fact that I am like a millennial who's calling myself, well, I'm a millennial woman calling myself a divorced dad. But the little teenage girls who are also into it are calling themselves like, oh, I'm in my like divorced dad era, just like 17-year-old chicks. It's for everyone. Everyone can be a divorced dad. You just...
Brian, I saw a clip from, I don't know, like Monday Night Raw or whatever, because I haven't had a chance to watch pro wrestling in a long time. And I saw someone holding up a sign that said yeet. And I was just like, that's so fucking 5-6 years ago.
Anytime I want to know anything about what's going on in the world, I go to the coffee shop and the girls there teach me. Like I was there the other day and I showed my poster in Burlington. I was like, look at my poster. And the one girl's like, that's cool. And the other girl goes, period. I'm like, okay. She's like, you know what that means? I was like, I have no fucking clue what that means.
I'm getting ready to learn something.
So I went and looked it up and I was like, okay. And then the next day I pull up and I get my coffee and my iced tea and I'm getting ready to pull away. And she's like, have a nice day. And I said, period. And drove off.
Look at you go. The next time.
Okay.
Oh, what were you gonna say?
No, I just saw, I looked up period, and the first thing that came up was menstruation.
Well, I mean.
And then what is a period? What happens during a period? So I don't get it. I still don't understand what you're trying to tell me.
You have to do like period meaning Urban Dictionary. So it'd be like if Leah said, oh, that mask is really cool. And I was like, period. I'd be agreeing with her. But like also being like, yeah, it is really exclamation point. Cool.
Yeah.
Oh, I get it. So like text lingo. It's like when I yell at my kids and I'm like, you're never going to do this again, period. I get it. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Well, kind of.
It all goes back to the dad stuff. Yeah.
You would be agreeing with somebody.
Jokes, dad lingo, dad chains, dad wallets. Fuck you guys. Just dads. Dad's rule.
You know what? It's my fucking fault. I just told him that being like a middle-aged dad is cool. So now he's
running with it.
The next time that you go get your coffee, I'm just saying that take a sip of the coffee and then you just tell the girl and just be like, oh my gosh, you ate, left no crumbs. This is so good. She'll be super
ate,
impressed.
Left no crumbs.
Ate, left no crumbs.
I just learned from my daughter what ate it up meant the other day.
But yeah, the left no crumbs, ate left no crumbs is when it's just like, but also the thing that I just came across on TikTok is the fact that you remember when we all used to go to parties and we had our physical little digital cameras and then you had to take the fucking card out. So now all these kids are like, make sure you get a little digital camera for your summer. It makes everything look vintage.
Oh, God.
I went to different kind of parties than you guys because I don't fucking remember any of the parties I went to. I don't fucking remember them. I remember waking up the next day on the floor somewhere. I don't remember anything else.
Either because I didn't have a dad chain for my camera, so I don't remember him either because I lost my fucking camera.
No, I was the bitch who documented everything. I have definitely not gotten jobs because of the shit that's found on the internet. A digital footprint is a real thing, people. Just keep that in mind.
Well, they didn't have the internet when I started going to parties, so.
That's there you go.
Well, back to the Crimson Bat. Which I am sorry, there's no disrespect to stray that far from the Crimson Bat. But I do want to say that they are heavily influenced by the Misfits. You can see it as I love the Misfits. So I hope that they're not regretting sending this comic to us to discuss. Like, oh, he likes Nickelback. Trust me. I mean, if I have the choice, I'm listening to the Misfits and I'm not pandering because why do I need to at this point? But regardless of what age they are or if they use the word period or if they have a wallet chain or not, again, I'm kind of repeating the point. I appreciate that they brought back what I felt was the age of the anti-hero and just that fuck everybody kind of vibe. I can't wait to see what they have coming out next. Hopefully we direct some people to them. Maybe they can make some sales off us talking about this, or they at least got a giggle out of our conversation and they send us the next issue. That'd be awesome.
I definitely need to, I need the next issue to see what happens. But I will say, the only other thing that I had on my note, and you were talking about him being the anti-hero. I do agree he's completely the anti-hero. One of the best things is, it's kind of like very Batman, where, you know, you see Batman suit up for the first time. And for his, he said, "I'm a weapon of war that is going to battle. I need a flag." It's his battle jacket. It's his battle vest because of the comic book Fiend Club. And then he said, "I was faceless. I needed an image to strike fear into the hearts of my enemies." And he had his Batman mask. But I just really liked those 2 points. But my absolute favorite was the fact that his flag was his battle vest. I thought that was so cool. So this comic is just pure punk rock, 100% beginning to end in so many different ways. And I appreciate that a lot.
Period.
You know, when you talked about period. So when you talked about the seeing Batman suit up for the first time, it made me think of something. And that is, if they become extremely successful with this, if this story really resonates with a lot of people, and if this comic takes off, now is the time to hop over to the, where Brian directed you twice already, to pick up that comic. Because what did I just see where, like, you know, the first Superman is, you know, going for $5 gajillion or whatever. I mean, when you get in on the ground floor, and that's a lot of reasons I enjoy comics because I enjoy comics, but there are people who enjoy it more than me. I am in it to a degree for the financial aspect. And so when I see that rare stuff, you know, jump out and grab it if you think it has any valor and is going to stick around, because that thing could be worth a shit ton of money someday. It has the potential. They have the potential to really put some valuable stuff out.
I do think that it could be something, because it was your point before, Clint, is the fact that they managed to touch on so many different genres and fandoms that it's pulling in so many people. So I think that they have a wide audience that they could attract with this. So I do see it being very popular. And like I said, I love it. It was one of the first points I made. And just because I'm scrolling through it as we're discussing it, and I stopped on the funeral scene, and you see all of the friends around the person who passed. And like I said, I know that this has so many inside jokes and things between them. It was very much made for them, but the fact that they made it so accessible to everyone else to enjoy too, that's great storytelling. That's so good, and they should be so proud of themselves. I'm proud of them.
And another good point is, I mean, they're great marketers, because they're obviously out pushing this comic. It's not like they just put this thing out and then sat on their laurels. You know what I mean? They have something really good going here, and they're out working and grinding and pushing it. And that's half the fucking battle right there. So my hat's off to them. You talk about all the different fandom and stuff. I did feel, and maybe this is probably the only thing, and it's going to sound like a dig, but it was cool. It's just them showing their references. But I felt like I was, or not references, the word I'm looking for, influences. Sorry. It was like I was watching a fan film for a second, because the shortcut that he goes to cut through to get home, it was called, what is it?
Crystal Field Park.
And of course the sign looks just like Camp Crystal Lake, you know? And so I was like, oh, I knew what it was right away. So, I mean, it sticks out to horror fans, but I was almost also kind of like, oh, it's like when I'm watching Friday the 13th Part 6 and they're on Cunningham Road, you know, stuff like that.
I will admit that was probably the most heavy-handed reference. I think everything else is very subtle. That is one that jumped out to me a lot. The other thing I'm kind of curious about is the fact that there's a foreign language that's being spoken, and I'm really curious if that's the language from Lord of the Rings.
What made you get to Lord of the Rings? You're talking about where the good demon who, or whatever, I think resurrected him, was like scribbling?
The good demon, because I'm kind of looking at it, the page that says I fucking remember. And so it is with the elf ninja. He has text around his head, and the text just looks very similar to the script that is on the one ring in the Lord of the Ring. I'm not sure if it is. I'm actually, once we complete this episode, I am going to look and see and try to compare. It does look, I don't even know what that's considered, if it's elvish or something like that, but I am curious if that's another thing. But I agree, the Crystal Field Park sign was a heavy-handed reference. Everything else felt a lot more like a gentle nudge, and that one was like, look, we like fucking horror,
right? We are Friday the 13th fans. If you figure out that that's an actual language and you try to like recite it out loud, please don't do it in my presence until you know it's safe. I have to at least get my two daughters through high school, and then whatever comes, come what may. I need a couple more years, please. All right, so read it out. Let's look. She's got this big smile on her face. She goes, let's see if we can possess Clint today and burn his house down, right?
This is why I said I was going to wait until the end of the episode, because I got Google fingers and I pulled it up and now I'm comparing them. So I dazed a little bit. I'm so sorry. And I can't even confirm if it is or not, is not. But I'm very fucking curious if this is the language from The Lord of the Rings.
Well, while you're Googling that, everybody else can Google over our podcast network, the PFPN. Check out some of the shows there. Give Leah some time. Give me some time to get some coffee.
And I need time to catch my breath from that smooth-ass transition. Smooth yeah. Operator. Smooth operator.
You're listening to the Prescribed Films Podcast Network, home to hundreds of hours of free podcast entertainment. The shows on this network all have a common goal, providing you with the best discussions about movies and other forms of entertainment media. The PFPN hopes to fill your earholes with audio joy. Visit our website with links to all the other amazing shows at www.thepfpn.com. Thanks for listening.
So now that we've heard from our podcast network, don't forget to check out the I Like It Spooky Horror podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and go over to crimsonbatcomics.com, buy some comics, check them out on Instagram. One of the coolest things, and we didn't talk about this, when you pull up crimsonbatcomics.com, there's a link to a charity. You can give them $1, you can give them $5, you can give them $10, $20, give them whatever the hell you want. That's just cool. I think it's super cool when people are doing something, trying to get something going, but they don't forget that there are other people that need help.
No, I was just saying, what's the charity for?
The charity is the Missing Murdered Indigenous Women, People, and Families. And it looks like 100% of the funds that you donate will be given to them. Yeah, everybody that donates will receive a sticker pack from Clemson Bat Comics, LLC.
No, that's always cool when you bring some humanity to it and something real to it. And Brian, that makes me think of, so Leah, I don't know if you knew this yet, but Brian twice a year does the polar plunge and then also does the walk against suicide. So you do two every year and then other things will pop up along the way. Or Brian, when Andy from Attack of the Killer podcast passed away late last year, they had an auction at Halloweenapalooza, you know, with the proceeds going to help Andy's family and children that were left behind. And so Brian picked up some stuff, a flashback, and, you know, for the auction for that. Yeah, he's not just spouting off. He puts his money where his mouth is. Puts his mouth where his money is. How do you say that?
Money where your mouth is.
Usually it's other people's money, but I got to hustle real hard to get it.
No, there you go. Yeah. Yeah. Smooth operator.
Bosky's a smooth operator.
Yeah, I do the out of the darkness walk, and I usually do the polar plunge. I took this year off. I needed a break. I was tired, and I let some other people collect some money because I usually do pretty good. I usually, you know, a couple thousand for the polar plunge, but I will do the out of the darkness walk. It's in the summer, and I don't have to jump into a fucking freezing lake for that one. I just have to walk.
We're all waiting for each other to take up the helm and end the show.
Nobody wants to jump in a freezing lake with me.
I'm just glad that Leah is actually able to sit down and talk, or wants to sit down and talk with us after we covered, you know, a mishmash for her while she was out doing whatever the fuck she was doing. So
I just wanted to give you guys a chance to have some fun and cover mishmash like I usually do. And you guys did an excellent job with it. You guys covered a lot of fabulous events that are happening in Michigan. It sounds like Brian is going to be coming and moving to Michigan because there's so much cool stuff happening here.
Yeah, that's why I'm going to downsize so he can't stay with me.
I still don't know how to pronounce Ypsilanti, just so we're all aware.
Neither do I.
It's Ypsilanti. Ips.
That sounds like a suggestion, not a rule.
It is Ips fucking period.
If you have a problem with how I say Ypsilanti, please send all my email to pyramidcom@gmail.com.
What part of period did you not understand?
You don't understand period. Just because you say period, it doesn't mean you know what you're saying.
Let's try it. I hope you guys have a good week. Take care. Bye-bye.
Period.
Exclamation point.
Not sure if that's even a thing.
It's not. Maybe a Nickelback.
Question mark?
Hey, what's wrong with you, man? Show some fucking respect for the dead, will ya?